Waiting for the best deals? Spring Black Friday savings are here. Shop early access now at Blinds.com and save big on new custom window treatments. At Blinds.com, shopping online for custom window treatments doesn't mean sacrificing on service, selection, or style. As the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, Blinds.com has hundreds of options to fit any decor and budget. Choose from stylish roller or bamboo shades, blackout options, and more. We even have motorized shades for your patio. DIY, or let our experts handle the heavy lifting. Blinds.com has you covered with free virtual consultations. We'll even send a pro to do the measure and install. Try before you buy with free samples delivered to your door. With over 25 million windows covered, every order's backed with Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday Early Access now for up to 40% off with minimum purchase, plus a free measure. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
Listen up, Friar faithful. 97.3 The Fan's Padres Roundtable is on the air.
Unbelievable!
It's time to discuss everything going on with the Padres. The 97.3 The Fan crew is here for the most in-depth discussion on the Friars in our weekly Padres Roundtable, delivered by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. And now, here's your host, Ben Higgins.
Win. What are we going to talk about with this team? Welcome into our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable. It is presented commercial-free every Thursday by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty, and I'm joined by my on-air colleagues here at 97.3 The Fan, Matt Scraby, Stephen Woods, Paul Reindl, Braden Soprenet, and Chris Ello for a team that is now 15-4, best record in Major League Baseball. Coming off a 5-1 homestand as they hit the road for Houston and Detroit for their second road trip of the season. So, gentlemen, I'm going to start by taking us all to task a little bit, except for Woods, who already answered this question earlier this week, so he wanted to be excused. So this is for everyone.
I'll re-answer it.
But Woods. No, all right. So we all were fairly optimistic about the San Diego Padres, but none of us, not single one of us, during spring training said, hey, watch out for this team. I think, you know, they're going to be the best-looking team in baseball at the start of this season. So the question for every single one of us who follows this team extremely closely, Chris, what did we miss when we were previewing the season that none of us even gave a thought to the fact, oh, yeah, they'll be on top of the division, should win a ton of their early season games. What did we miss?
First, I'd like you to ask Matt Scraby who I picked to win the division in our preseason picks. I was chastised because how could you pick the Padres in a division where the Dodgers reside?
You really picked the Padres? I didn't know that.
I did, and now that I've said it, it'll probably jinx everything.
Thanks.
But I still think I missed a lot, and I think I fell for the fact that they didn't go for the flashy, you know, bright, you know, diamond in the off season. They just stayed put, and I think every time you stay put, you always kind of miss something. There's no way I saw the bullpen with a 1.52 ERA. I didn't see Nick Pivetta and Randy Vasquez ranking third and fourth in the National League in ERA. And I don't know that I even saw Fernando Valenzuela.
That's I would hope not.
One of these days, guys, you'll be this old and you'll make mistakes like that.
That's not possible.
I don't even think I saw Fernando Tatis going on a 55-55 pace to open the season. So I also think, though, it is just a great run that they're having. And, you know, if you're going to play 800 baseball for the whole season, that would be a record.
Well, I'm impressed that someone – we all picked the Dodgers on our show to win the division. Matt, what was the reaction when – when he was it an eye roll when he picked the Padres to win the division?
I think I more just said homer.
Everyone in baseball, every ESPN expert, every athletic expert, every Fox expert, they all picked the Dodgers to win the division. But he didn't.
He didn't. And I think that Chris did believe in the Padres. But, I mean, all of us thought the Dodgers were just going to run away with this. And it's easy to think that. Because when you look on paper, they have everyone. But what I don't...
They still might.
You know, they still might. You're right. I mean, yes, there's a ton of time left.
We're only at the clubhouse turn here.
Yes, yeah. We're not all the way through with our round yet. But I think what I missed during the offseason, because on the Scraby show, I kept saying, man, this is going to be tough. This is going to be tough. There's no depth. There's no this. There's no outfield. I missed the mindset in the offseason. You can't really measure mindset, and their mindset throughout the entire offseason was to get back to baseball and get back to how they were playing baseball and do it the right way. And that's what I missed. I mean, you can't predict that.
Braden, yeah, it's the easy thing to pick the Dodgers in the offseason. And again, as we said, they could still go on and win this division. But the Padres clearly seem to be a better team than we were giving them credit for.
Yeah, I think the one thing that we really missed, I think I and we've talked about, you know, the culture and the camaraderie in the clubhouse. I've said it a lot on the show. I've kind of underestimated probably how much of that probably plays into their run. I think honestly, having this team and this core group play you know, amongst each other for X amount of years now in a row, I think goes a long way in the sport of baseball, which is such an individual sport. But just knowing the guys around you and not having a drastically different clubhouse every single year. I mean, from 2019 to about, you know, really 2022, it seemed like every trade deadline, you had a brand new Padres team that would roll through there, or even during the offseason, and there wasn't a lot of consistency. Now with all these long-term contracts, and I'm sure we'll evaluate the end of those in a couple of years that might not age well, but what it does is it creates this sense of, like, we know what's expected of us. We establish what this culture is going to be. We establish what it means to be a San Diego Padre. And with some of the leadership that they've gotten from Manny and Joe, you know, just to say a couple names, but the way that they all interact with each other, I think, shows how much better they can play besides not having the, you know, obviously greatest roster ever constructed. I thought you saw that yesterday when Mark Grant pointed out on the television broadcast of just the simple coaching from Ruben Niebla and Nick Pivetta working on mechanics mid-game. I mean, you don't see that too often in Major League Baseball.
Well, there's certainly something to that. I mean, we weren't as good of a show when we started, and once you have experience together, you can communicate better. And communication is part of baseball. And I think Braden, when he talks about just knowing what to say as a coach, it takes some time to get to know your players. A look that Manny gives to the other infielders in the ninth inning, like, I'm playing back, but I'm also looking for a bunt on this play, and I know that I can get him. You have that level of comfort with your teammates and your coaches.
Yeah, and I definitely missed the ability to carry momentum from one season to the next, because that's exactly what I had always thought. We had always talked about, you know, when that season's over, it's over. And you move on, you might have some new faces or whatever, but the approach has still been the same, and that comes with continuity of coaching staff, players, Mike Schilt, you know, and his overarching message. But to watch them pick up, you know, and obviously not where they left off entirely with 24 scoreless, but to come out and play the same style of baseball that they did last year has led to a really, really fun, incredible start.
And Paulie, I mean, anything else that you felt like we missed about this team?
I think we underestimated Schilt ball, and it's kind of a little bit of what everyone has said already, but I don't remember a ton of the small ball last year working as well as it's already worked through April 17th of this year. I remember a lot of big-time home runs, clutch home runs last year, late-inning home runs and walk-offs, and we still have plenty of time for those to come. It's the bunts. I know Woods is the resident bunt hater. I haven't seen a bunt that was at least attempted in a spot where I didn't go, yeah, it's a great spot for that bunt.
Same.
You got guys swiping bags. They're doing all of the little things right and not depending on the long ball. That's going to come. Fernando's got six. I think Merrill's second on the team with three. None from Bogey, two from Manny. Like, we haven't been relying on that. They've been relying on the small ball, and I'm starting to wonder if Schilty has brought the Cardinal way is now the Padre way. Because it does feel like a lot of this, their style of play this year feels like a lot of those Cardinal teams that we've seen over the years.
All right, since we all seem to think that the consistency, the continuity has been part of the Padres' early season success, let me ask you about A.J. Preller's then impact, the offseason that was really quiet. Is this A.J. because he's learned from previous experience? Is this A.J. because his hands were tied more financially? I mean, where do you think this evolution of A.J. Preller, Matt, has come from? You know, because he was a different general manager the last year plus than he was the first 7 or 8 years of his tenure.
The reason I like A.J. Preller is that he's not afraid to change how he does things, and he's not afraid to take risks when he needs to. But I think A.J. has learned over the years that he doesn't need to be so reactionary, and he doesn't need to go after the big-name guy. He realized, maybe even last year, it seems like there was some sort of mindset change with A.J., but it was, let's get the right player and not the big-name player. Let's bring in a guy like David Peralta last year. This year, Jose Iglesias. Let's go with those guys. Let's build around our core. And I think that's what the biggest thing is for A.J. Preller, is that he's building around the core.
Go ahead, Woods.
Oh, it just seemed like you were ready to talk.
I was. I didn't know if you were going in order. No,
it's evolution, right? And not a lot of general managers have the opportunity to evolve. I think there's, if you looked at the history of baseball, there was probably some really good GMs that weren't given a fair shake. There's probably been thousands of players that weren't in the right place at the right time, that weren't given the opportunity to grow because they didn't get immediate results. A.J. Preller, you cannot deny that he has grown as a GM. You just can't. It's there. It's obvious. Did he make some dumb decisions? Sure, they all do. Every single one of them has made really bad choices. I watched Andrés Muñoz throw again last night, and I was kicking myself again going, how do we let this guy go, right? Like, but it happens, man, and he has never been a bore to cover. He has never been a bore to follow. He is taking risks, but he's been given the opportunity to grow as a person. And as a general manager, it's just time. Time has taught him, and wisdom. And I think, obviously, I think honestly, like having heard him talk about it, the time he spent with Peter Seidler probably helped shape who he is now, as opposed to who he was then.
Can I add one more thing about AJ Preller's evolution? Just like you said, like he's more personable now. And I think that's a great point about Peter Seidler. But even the story during Jackson Merrill's press conference of him and how he scouted Jackson Merrill, he doesn't tell that 2-3 years ago, and feels comfortable to do it now. And he's becoming a fun guy to cheer for.
Yeah,
is he not perhaps the most fearless executive that we've seen? Yeah. I mean, I was stunned when he signed Nick Pivetta, Chris, because one thing I know about A.J. Preller, he's not giving up one of his first-round draft picks to sign a mid-level player like a Nick Pivetta.
We said it that day. It was on a Tuesday. Yeah. We said it that day. Nick Pavetta's still out there. They're not going to give up a first-round draft pick. And by 6 o'clock that night, he was on his way here.
He's always willing to surprise us and do something unexpected and different and unorthodox and out of the box. And I got to imagine you like that about A.J. Preller.
I do, and I'm still upset with you guys because I listened that morning and took my radar completely off.
Yeah, ours too. Yeah.
And then that night I'm watching ESPN and it scrolls across the bottom. I'm like, damn those guys.
How pleasantly
told me not to worry about
it. But how pleasantly surprised were you? I couldn't believe it.
I couldn't either.
I was at a Little League meeting and I was like, you got to be kidding me.
I tried
to
explain to my wife why that was a big deal. Yeah, she's like, so they signed a player. I'm like, no, you don't get it. This changes everything.
It really did.
And it kind of has. I think there's two words, one that AJ has become more of and one that he's become less of. One, he's become more mature, and that goes along with what you guys are saying, and he got the opportunity, because you're right, Woods, 90% of GMs after one season where you're only 500, you're out the door, and somebody else has got to be better. Hopefully this is a lesson maybe out there. These guys know what they're doing. It doesn't always work. That's number one. He's way more mature. And second, he's way less reckless. I feel he still has fun. He's still out there trying stuff. But I think he's at least, before he rolls the dice, he's at least blowing on the dice.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Just to make sure that he doesn't fire him in there too soon. So I think those are the two changes.
Paulie, I mean, you know, we've interviewed A.J. Preller many times. What have you seen with the evolution of A.J.?
Yeah, I think it's growth, not necessarily change. And depending on how you view it, I guess you could say those are one and the same. I think it's growth in that he didn't go out and make the big, splashy free agent signing over the offseason that we have come to expect. It drove us insane up until that Pivetta signing, at least. We're like, what are you doing? This is the most ridiculous offseason we've ever had under the A.J. Preller regime. He didn't have the right deal. The right guy wasn't out there. I believe that if the right guy for the right price was out there, A.J. Preller would have made it happen. He waited until his guy was available for the price point that he wanted for his organization, but I still don't think that he's completely changed in that we're not going to have off seasons like that now moving forward, and we're only going to be buying on the fringe. I'm telling you right now, if this team stays competitive and stays, whether it's first place, second place, whatever, leading a wild card spot, I'm very excited to see what AJ does at the trade deadline. Does he go out and make a huge, crazy trade, or does he add on the fringe? I don't know, but I do think he has changed. He's evolved. He's grown, but he's still going to have that same maverick GM style that we've come to know and appreciate with AJ Preller.
Yeah, Braden, AJ is in the business of making all of us who like to try to predict what he's going to do look bad. So beware going forward.
Yeah, you know, in terms of his evolution, I just think, you know, the early days of him being the general manager, they had a lot more holes that they had to fill compared to what they have to do now. I mean, I think when you have, you know, obviously, you have untradeable assets on your team with guys that have signed long-term contracts with no trade clauses that a lot of people don't want. You know, and in the past, you know, he didn't have those players. And on top of that, you know, like I said before, they had a lot more holes to fill. They didn't have, you know, the Fernando Tatis Juniors playing every day in right field. They didn't have the Manny Machados. They didn't have, you know, even the Xander Bogarts at shortstop. I mean, they're starting to plug in all these guys that are there long term, that are going to be there long term, and so there's not a gigantic splash that they need to make. I think resources also plays a little bit of a factor, as you mentioned in the beginning part of the question. I think it's a little bit of both, of, you know, the finances, obviously got to be a little bit more tight with the money, but on top of that, I think I agree with everybody else, is I think he's learned how to be a little bit more cautious and maybe think about a couple outcomes before instead of wheeling and dealing. But as Paul said, and I agree, you know, I don't think that's going to prevent him from making a big, big splash if it works out for the Padres and it works into a matter that he believes is beneficial to the team.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV
TV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps. Restrictions apply.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
I don't think they're going to make a big splash, even if they keep this record up. And the reason is I don't think he feels, and I don't feel, that this team at any point is going to need to be jolted. And I think if you got somebody like the likes of a Juan Soto, I'm not going to get him back. But that would change the whole complexion of the squad. I think part of what's making them really good right now is that everybody feels, you know, very comfortable. So I don't know that you got to be careful if you're going to make a big ad.
I'm thinking of it more in the terms of like adding a more of a frontline starter, possibly via trade, whether as opposed to like a five guy. You're not going to have the Juan Soto trade that we saw a couple of years ago. But like, could he say, you know what, this team really needs to get over the edge? A Sandy Alcantara, you know, or something like that, whereas it's not the future $800 million player, but it's a frontline guy that's going to definitely help you in the playoffs.
I don't think he's going to make the move either. I just think he's not afraid to make the move if one presents itself. And again, like the market, who knows who's going to be available at that point in time anyway.
Listening to our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, brought to you by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. I guess if there was going to be a splash of any sort, one area where AJ could improve the roster, and if you're looking for any flaws, and there are not many so far in this team, is how they performed against left-handed pitching. They did win yesterday against Matthew Boyd, but didn't exactly hit him either. They're 4-4 against left-handed starters, 11-0 against right-handed starters so far this season. So is there any concern on your guys' part? How much of an issue is that? And should they be looking at possibly adding some right-handed options? And why are they struggling so much when you have a Fernando Tatis and a Manny Machado? You'd think, oh, great, lefty coming up should work well. Woods, why do you think that they've struggled against lefties?
I mean, we know nothing about baseball. We all panicked last year. Oh, we're never going to be able to hit righties because we have so many righties. And you know what, man? You just don't see a lot of the southpaws out there. You just don't. So it's not something that you're used to facing on an everyday basis. I don't know, man. Do I need to add more right-handed hitting? Maybe. Do I need to add more left-handed hitting? Maybe. I want the right guy for this team when needed. And look, I mean, if you're picking apart the roster, like you're going to need to figure out your left field situation at some point. You know, you will. And I hope the catching core holds up. I know it's getting a lot of high praise from the pitchers right now, and the proof is in the pudding, right? With a 15-4 record. So right now, so far, so good. I'm not trying to upset the apple cart even a little bit right now. Everything's fine. But I think down the road, yeah, man, you could look at bringing in another left fielder, whether they hit right-handed or left-handed. I don't care. I really don't. You're just not going to see a lot of lefties, which leads to that kind of imbalance.
Yeah, I mean, Chris, how important is it? I mean, you worry, I guess, if you continue to struggle against lefties and you start getting closer to, like, postseason time, you know, teams will try to exploit that. They'll hold back lefties just to face you in a series, and at that point, maybe it could start to be a problem. Do you foresee it being an all-season issue for the Padres?
No. Last year was a huge issue at about the mid-season point. Yeah. I remember actually going through on the computer at home about a 35-40 game stretch against lefties where they didn't score more than two runs in a game.
Yeah.
It was awful. They finally kind of worked their way out of it by the end of the season, and I think Woodsy's right. Baseball does these crazy things. Secondly, let's just say it stays exactly the same. You don't make any changes. You go 500 against lefties, and 1,000 against righties, you're going to have a good season, Ben. There's a lot more righties than there are lefties. So I don't, you know, I'm just saying don't throw out the baby with the bathwater type of thing.
Braden, are we looking at a situation, though, where the guys who they brought in specifically maybe to hit lefties like Yuli Gurriel are the ones that we really haven't seen contribute to this team very much so far?
I think that's part of the problem, or at least I thought it was, and then Kevin Acey pointed out that the Padres are actually worse against left-handed relievers than they are left-handed starters. But that being said, I do think the roster construction in terms of like lineup construction against left-handed pitching is just not very good because of the players that they have brought in. Now, that being said, you didn't have Yuli in the starting lineup yesterday, and they ended up beating a left-hander. And the four losses that the Padres have had Yuli Gurriel in the starting lineup. It's not his fault why they have lost the four games, obviously. But I'd like to know how much longer the Yuli Gurriel experiment will continue, because he hasn't really done too much offensively. In fact, I remember all three of his hits. He had the one against the A's and the double of the gap. He had the one that he punched through to beat the Braves, so he did give you a win.
Yep.
And then he had the one the other night to score a run early in the game. And that's it. That's his three hits that he has. And for a guy that's notoriously better against righties than lefties, who was brought in to hit lefties, you would think he'd be hitting a lot better than 113 or whatever it is. So in terms of changes, I just think you don't need to go bring in a left-handed bat or a right-handed bat or whatever, like Woodsy was saying. I think you got some guys in the organization that probably can fill in a little bit better than a guy like Yuli Gurriel.
And we talked about it a little bit this morning, Paul, but they're going to have some decisions to make depending on how quickly Jackson Merrill and Jake Cronenworth come back, who they want to keep on this roster. They did add Bryce Johnson back yesterday in a trade with the Pirates. Goes to AAA, but could he be coming back? He can hit, you know, both sides of the plate. But there are some interesting decisions coming up for this team.
Yeah, I'll be honest. When I saw that trade come down yesterday, Bryce Johnson returning to the Padres organization, probably my first thought was, is there any chance that Jackson Merrill is going to be a little bit longer to return than we originally thought?
You've been hanging out with Scraby too long, because he said the same thing.
I mean, I'm just being honest. That was my first thought. I'm like, interesting. You don't, at least I don't have a ton of confidence right now at the catcher position, just in general. So getting rid of any catcher, not that Brett Sullivan was going to be the savior of the season or anything like that, but letting go of a piece at a position of already concern, and then going out and getting an outfielder when you have three, four outfielders that you're still trying to figure out what's the right fit for everybody. I wonder if maybe they're thinking Jackson could be a little bit longer than we all thought. Let's go out and get another outfielder who we can put in center field, perhaps, so we don't have to have Jason Hayward and Tyler Wade out there for the long haul. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that's not the case. But I think in general, for what everyone else has said, I agree. I think rather than looking at who to bring in and add to this lineup, I think they're still waiting to let guys figure it out with their play and play themselves into or out of the lineup.
Well, it's much easier with a 15-4 record to give 100%. Guys a little bit more leash, yep. You know, certainly. So it's hard to complain about
this. I don't think anybody's panicking.
I don't think anybody's panicking.
Go back to the Johnson thing. I mean, they've pulled up almost every Chihuahua that plays outfield to the major league club. I mean, somebody needs to play in the outfield in AAA, and, you know, with the catching situation, it tells you a lot what the organization thinks of Brett Sullivan, that they feel like they can expend him to try to upgrade their outfield in the minor leagues, especially with the two guys that they have at the major leagues at the catching spot.
Yeah, I was speculating, I mean, before they traded Brett Johnson, Luis Camposano's been hitting well. I don't think they really want him catching, but if you needed a right-handed bat,
do you know Luis Camposano the other night got caught in a game against the Rockies farm team, lallygagging a throw back to the pitcher? The kid ran in from third on a walk, and by the time they were done throwing the ball around, three runs scored because of that.
On a walk.
Those are the kind of things Luis Camposano better not keep doing, because
it's hard to do.
Those get noticed.
If you're just swinging a bat, you know, like if he's mashing and
right.
We've been waiting on the promise of Luis Camposano. I mean, and again, he's mashing in El Paso, which a lot of guys do. But no, Ben thought this morning, maybe, you know, if you need a right-hander instead of Yuli Gurriel, maybe Campy is the guy that fills that role.
But I would be surprised to ever see him behind the plate unless one of the two guys
gets hurt. Yeah.
I don't see him coming back to catch, at least anytime soon. All right, again, not looking for problems, it just, you know, things to discuss. And I, you know what, when I listen to Matt, sometimes you will maybe worry more than necessary, I think. Is that fair,
yes,
Chris?
That
sometimes
fair.
He does that.
He also celebrates more than necessary. So it goes both ways.
I'll look at this question because it's probably much ado over nothing. But he had just one bad inning on Monday, did have a rough outing in Sacramento. Is there any level of concern on your part, Matt, about Dylan Cease and his start to the season?
That's an interesting question because I want to say no, but I also lean towards yes just a little bit because Dylan Cease is a great pitcher. We've seen him be Cy Young caliber, but he's not consistent. And he goes through these stretches where he's really good. He throws a no-hitter. He doesn't give up a hit. Or he strikes out 10 guys in three straight games. And then he'll go and he'll give up 9 runs to the A's. There's no concern for me with Dylan Cease because I think he'll figure it out. But the consistency is concerning for me because we don't really know which Dylan Cease we're going to get.
And some of that, you know, Woods is pitching. You know, I mean, if you were just completely consistent every time out, well, you'd be, I don't know, Sandy Koufax. I mean, even he probably had a few bad starts from time to time. But it hasn't quite been Dylan Cease. Mike Schilt went out of his way to praise how good he thought Dylan Cease looked in his last start. And that actually raised a red flag for me. Sometimes when Schilt goes out of his way to praise a guy,
I start worrying
that there's actually something that he, you know, is worried about in his own and is like talking through it. But
there's, you know, there's it's wild to me that Dylan Cease is the weakest link right now. Again, things that we missed, right? That's definitely one. But you know, you're seeing it around baseball a little bit. Aaron Nola's 0-4. He's got like a 6 ERA. Five, you know,
he got shelled yesterday.
I mean,
Corbin Burns has not been
as advertised yet. You know, it happens. It's really hard to do. His stuff in his last start, it was the best start he's had all season. It's definitely something to build on for sure for Dylan Cease. And you know, we joked about it. Obviously, shaving a beard is not going to set you on a path to success.
Bring the mustache back.
Yeah, bring the mustache back.
Brain's going the other way.
Yeah,
what I said.
Bring the mustache back.
He's picking up the facial hair that Dylan left off. Dylan let go of.
Yeah.
And I just think, you know, like there's still time for him to figure it out. I mean, I know that we're all in a rush and every game feels like a playoff game because we're not used to seeing our team play this way. But he's got time to figure it out. And again, it's weird to say, Dylan needs to go out and keep us in a ball game so we can turn it over to our bullpen after 5 innings. That's really what that's all he has to do. And you know, easier said than done, certainly. But I'm not overly concerned, but it is weird that he is the weakest link in our starting rotation right now.
And, Brayden, it is silly. Facial hair has nothing to do with how you pitch, but it may be a window into someone's kind of mental state and confidence that – they might do that to try to change things up.
He also
and how
told us
thinking.
In spring training, he goes, I don't know how long this thing's going to go.
Yeah,
like,
I think
if the guys
committed.
Think I should shave it, I'll probably shave it. Like,
well, it was it
I said this was a bit of a mountain out of a molehill question.
Old
so
Higgins again.
He wasn't committed to the beard. He needs to go with the Doc Holliday look. That's when he threw his no-hitter for the Padres. I'm not overly concerned about Dylan Cease. Kevin Acey put it out in his daily newsletter a couple of days ago about how streaky he is and how he's been in his career. There are stretches I don't have the exact numbers by memory, but there are stretches that he has gone on where he has like a 7 ERA over 3, 4, 5 starts, and then followed by a stretch where he has a 1.15 ERA over 5, 6 starts. And that was during even last year when he was finishing high in Cy Young voting as well. So I'm not overly concerned. I just think when you acquired Dylan Cease, you got a very streaky pitcher who has always been a streaky pitcher. And as you mentioned, Ben, I mean, it's kind of pitching in general. You're going to have those bad outings. So no, not overly concerned. And, you know, as Wood said, if he's the weakest link right now, you know
good
what?
Problem.
It's a good problem to have because that means Randy Vasquez is shoving and Kyle Hart's doing well and Nick Pivetta is proven to be a really good signing. So, and we'll see what happens when you get.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Zoe. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning. because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Healthy.
I think for me, Chris, Dylan C. still gets way too much swing and miss to ever be someone I'm going to worry about. Right. His slider, when it's on, is still nasty. He can get guys to miss his fastball, which is a tough skill, and to get a major league guys to not be able to hit a fastball.
Ask Bobby Miller.
You know you're doing something. You know you're doing something right. So occasionally he misses location. They hit it. It's going to happen to anyone. Ultimately, I'm not really worried about Dylan Cease.
No, I'm not. First of all, I don't think he's the weakest link. I think it looks that way, but he didn't get to face the Rockies at home.
That's fair.
Kyle Hart did. We got the and you know, that was an automatic 9 shutout innings there that Dylan Cease missed out on. I looked this up when he gave up the 5 straight hits to the A's last week or week ago or so. In 24 of his previous 35 starts, that's 24-11, he'd given up 5 or fewer hits in the whole game. So that I just think this is crazy. I think it's a bit of a one-off. He's off. He's in a slump, and that's all it is.
Bad question, Ben.
No, it isn't. Because I understand what he's doing. I understand what he's trying. He could shove it down to Houston, you know, or the next game, and he'll be right back and be fine.
All right, I'm not going to even try to find any more flaws right now. They just don't exist. So we're going to instead, now that we're halfway done with our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, brought to you by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. We're just going to do a double 7th inning stretch slash roundtable draft. It's nice. A snake draft today with two questions. You draft one on the way, and then you come back and draft the second question on the way back. We'll go alphabetical order by first name, which means it'll be me, Braden, Chris, Matt, Paul, and then Steven.
Okay. You're just trying to show us how smart you are that you were able to alphabetize.
I wrote it
that.
Down.
Yeah. Okay, he wrote it down.
He had ChatGPT do it first.
Here are the two questions. Question one. What is, besides the Padres, your favorite team nickname in Major League Baseball? Like any of the other team names. And then on the way back, since we talked about it during our show a little bit in the last segment, if you were flying on the Padres team plane, who would you want to sit next to for a cross-country flight? So I'll go first with the team nickname, and then we'll go through and come back with the second question. And I kind of was inspired by this question because the Padres are going to Houston. And I think Astros is absolutely the coolest nickname maybe in Major League Baseball. Fits perfectly for the city with NASA. You had the Astrodome, which was cool. They've always had kind of cool uniforms and logos built around their identity as the Astros. And I thought, all right, that's when you're trying to come up with one, they really kind of nailed it for Houston. So I'm going to go with Astros.
You know, it's really funny. Scraby and I talked about this yesterday. They didn't originally choose Astros.
Colt.
They went
45.
With Colt 45.
Yeah.
They named themselves after a handgun. I don't believe that would
survive
in this day and age. So it's interesting that they landed on a good nickname,
they
didn't actually.
Not the first time.
Right. They didn't nail it right away.
All right, Braden, you are second up in the draft.
That's hard. I think out of all of the professional sports leagues, like baseball's got all the cool names for their city. I mean, they all kind of work. I think it's a very tough question. I like. I'm going to go with the Angels. I think everything that they, you know, with their logo and everything like that is super cool. I like their gear. You know, I like the name. The fact that when you translate the city, the Angels doesn't make a lot of sense, but neither does the Philadelphias. So, you know, but I think you go a lot of different ways with that. I'm just going to go with the Angels, keep it simple. But I like a lot of team names in Major League Baseball. I think MLB did a really good job in incorporating city ties to their baseball teams.
I think Angels have the best secondary nickname of Halos.
Yes.
Like Halos Friars would be the secondary nickname for the Padres. Yeah. Chris, you're next up.
Well, on the you know, I'm agree with Braden on the Halo part because if you go back in the day, they actually had hats that had a halo on the hat, a big like all the way around. I would love to see them bring it back. It was an amazingly kind of cool look to me. So Angels is there, And I think the worst before I answer is the Dodgers, because they're still named after trolley Dodgers,
yeah, makes no sense,
which were invented in Brooklyn. So
it's like the Utah Jazz.
Yeah.
The Los Angeles Lakers.
Right.
I mean, Dodgers, a lot of L.A. teams. With
Dodgers
transplant.
Have become synonymous, but it really shouldn't be that way.
When's the last time you saw a Ram in L.A.?
So I'm going to go with either 50-50. Either I think the Brewers fit Milwaukee,
yeah.
And I think the Diamondbacks fit Arizona.
You were going to go with the Rockies? I think the Rockies is a cool name, too.
That's a terrible name. They stole it from a previous professional hockey franchise.
Oh, there you go, the hockey guy.
So it's not original.
It's still cool, though.
Scraby, you're next up.
Well, I was going to say Rockies. Oh.
Now you're shamed into it. It's available.
Triceratops is a massive.
It is available.
Rockies is good.
I would say the Cubs. And the Cubs, because it's a classic name, and Baby Bear is a good nickname for him. I think Jesse calls them the Baby Bears during the broadcast. So I'm going to go with Cubs.
Cubbies, yeah.
Yeah, Cubbies.
It's not a bad one.
Don't you think on this subject that the White Sox should at least wear some white socks?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Thought about
them. Paulie, what about you?
Well, Elo said about 8 different teams. I don't know which one he officially selected. But I'll go with – I like the Diamondbacks because I also like D-backs. And I think they can always have a cool logo with the rattlesnake.
That is a good one.
Fits Arizona.
Secondary name too, Ben.
Secondary nickname, the Snakes. I think that's pretty cool.
All right, and then Woods, so you're going to go last, but then you're going to come around and go first on the second question of who you want to sit next to on the team playing.
I'm going
to
go with the Royals. I've always liked that name. I have no idea why they're called the Royals. None. Like, not even a little bit. I
got to look at Chris. Does Chris know?
Yeah, do you know?
I feel like you would know this.
I had a chance to go to Kauffman Stadium a couple years ago. I had the barbecue and Reese's peanut butter sandwich.
What?
A barbecue sandwich.
Do you remember
Reese's
this? Yeah, it was pulled.
It was pulled pork sandwich.
Then Reese's peanut butter cups.
And bacon bits inside. It's maybe the best thing I've ever eaten in my entire life. But I liked, I liked the logo. I've always thought it was cool. I've always liked the Athletics too. I named my adult baseball team after the A's. I always thought they had the killer stuff. But as far as sitting next to somebody on a plane, I need to know, am I looking to have fun or am I looking to relax? Because that's a different. So I'm flying across the country.
Five-hour flight.
We've just taken 2 of 3 from the Cubs. So I'm in a good mood.
What class are we in, by the way?
I'm feeling pretty good. Well, we're on the charter.
So everybody in the first class all the way through. 2 seats.
You're not in the Dave Marcus.
You got one person next to you. That's
it. You're not in the Dave Marcus cheap seats. No, you're good.
I'm going to sit next to you. I'm going to sit next to Michael King.
Ooh,
yeah, I think we would have a really interesting conversation. And one of my favorite guys, obviously, has taken the place of Blake Snell for the in-game interviews and does such a great job and getting better every time. I'm sitting next to Michael the King, as I call him.
That's a real good choice, and I got to wait through everybody now as we come back to the snake on the draft and go to Paulie.
Yeah, we talked about this very briefly on our show this morning. I'm going to go with Manny because I do think if – following the same logic as Woods, if it's the happy fly, you just took 2 out of 3, everyone's feeling good, then I don't know why. Nobody said anything to me. I just have this sneaky suspicion that Manny Machado is like the ringleader on these fun flights, fun team activities, team bonding moments that we have no idea about, like a plane ride like that. I feel like he cuts loose. We see a different side of Manny than we see even when the scrum in front of his locker or anything like that. I think he's like running the card games in the back of the plane. I think he's got control of all the money for the card games. Like, I think that's the fun spot to be. He's the veteran. He's been here a bunch. He knows what he's doing. I'm going to stick next to Manny.
All right, Matt, who would you sit next to on the team plane?
Oh, man. There's two names that immediately came to mind, Jason Hayward and Dylan Cease. And I'm going to go with Jason Hayward because we talked to him at spring training, and he just seems like a guy who likes to chat.
That was my second pick.
Great. Yeah. He's just tons of wisdom.
Wisdom. And wisdom. I would ask him about his career. I would probably...
Don't ask him about earthquakes.
Yeah, do not ask him about earthquakes.
Why?
He did not want to answer that question at all.
Oh, Ben, you asked him
about
it?
We had a game to play tonight.
I missed this.
And I nearly got
and then he shut Ben down, and then Ben asked him 3 more questions about our
correct.
So, that's what we're doing today, he said. Oh, is that what we're doing today? He kind of gave me the look.
Yeah.
He's like, I'll let it slide.
I'm now terrified of Jason Hayward, but that's fine. You can sit next to him for 5 hours. I'm sure it'll go yeah, it well like for you, Matt. End.
Well, we told the story about Adam.
He was pretty cool to Scraby and I. When
yeah, he was.
Met with
he,
him,
was.
So.
He seemed like a
didn't
guy.
Ask about
I see why Scraby's picking him.
Chris, who do you got?
I want Mike Schilt. Wow. And there's a couple of reasons.
Kiss
one,
ass.
Yeah, you know this is a five.
I want a little
point.
More playing time. I need a little more playing time. First, I think he's smarter than hell about baseball. So I would love to have a conversation with him, but it would be on the caveat that he'd be willing to talk to me, and that concerns me a little bit because I don't know that he would be willing to open up to anybody, especially somebody that he's not familiar with. But at the same time, it also looks because I feel like when you talk to Mike Schilt, you better bring it or he isn't going to respond to you. So I think the challenge of hanging out with him for 5 hours, plus my uncle's from St. Louis and told me some good stories about him when he was a Cardinal manager that I
oh,
could
that's
share.
That's how you get in.
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
I feel like the extended Schilt conversation, when he gets talking baseball, like we've gotten him going a couple of times at spring training, He knows so much, and
right.
It is so fascinating to listen to him really get into detail and to have that amount of time with him,
right.
I think. But, again, it might take a couple of hours on the flight before
you
finally
I might need the first 2 hours just to get in there, yeah.
All right, Braden, your second to last here.
I'm kind of torn between the local guys, just being a local guy myself. But, I've gotten to sit down and talk with Joe Musgrove before, so I'm going to go with the newly called up Connor Joe. Kind of grew up in the same area, kind of know a lot of the same people. I think it'd be an interesting flight and kind of talking with him. He's got a great story, too, coming up to the major leagues and everything that he's gone through. So with all of that and being two local guys from San Diego and from the Poway area in general, that's who I'm going to go with.
All right. Finally, I thought this went over a lot because I'd be worried – just awkward. Anytime you have to converse with someone for hours is difficult.
It is.
Jake can carry on some good conversations. I thought about Jake, but ultimately I settled on Ruben Niebla because he's just
good
such a...
I'm glad I didn't steal him because he was right there for me.
He's such a great guy. He's funny. I think he would make the flight pass pretty quickly, have a good time. You could sit in silence for a while. I think he'd be comfortable with that as well. He has the ability, I think, and you can see it working with his pitching staff. He can tailor conversations to who he's talking to. He looks at whatever pitcher, whatever they need, he knows what to say. And I think that would carry over to a flight and have a really good conversation.
I'm curious, do guys sit next to the same guy most flights?
Pretty
do they
much
switch
sure.
it up? Is it totally random?
Tony's given us a little insight, not a lot, but I'm pretty sure flights are like bus rides. You kind of grab a seat, and that's pretty much where you end up most of the time.
It's not like, hey, Louie, save me a seat or anything like that.
No one picked Luis Arraez. I feel like he'd be too enthusiastically fun.
Yeah, he would be a lot.
A lot to handle.
No, I don't know if I'd give him a chest slap multiple
like,
times.
All right, I'm done. I'm going to take a nap now.
Yeah. You get him up flight to San Francisco?
Perfect.
Yes. Flight to Philly?
All right. We are continuing on here. It is our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable brought to you by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. All right, back to the baseball. John Heyman tweeted this week that the 2025 NL West may be the best division of all time. Seems a little bit early, but I heard Chris mention it, and so I brought it up on our show today. You currently have the four best records in Major League Baseball, all in the same division. Don't know if they keep stats on that, but I can't imagine that this late in the season we've ever seen that before. So how long do you think that this can play out? Not four best records, but are all these teams, the top four at least, able to hang and continue this pace, and will it end up being the best division that baseball has ever seen? Chris, why don't you start with this one?
Thank you. I said last week I think the Giants are going to fall back a little. I think they're playing over their head. But I think I don't mean this negative. I think the Padres are playing over their head. I mean, 80% is over your head. I think Arizona's good. I mean, there's no reason why these can't be among the best four in baseball for a while. Through the first half of the season. I think they're going to end up playing each other so much or more that, somebody's going to have to start trailing behind, and I think that'll be the Giants.
None of those teams have played each other once, right? Off the top of my head, I haven't seen.
You might be right. The Rockies have played them and donated a few wins.
Padres haven't played any of the top three. I don't remember.
I don't think the Giants have either. I don't think any of those four teams have played each other.
That could be part of it, but at the same time, we all expect the Dodgers to be really, really good, and they will be. Padres look like they're going to be able to at least hold on to some of it, even if they're playing above their head. I think the Diamondbacks are a legit good team. We all thought that going in, and even if the Giants don't play at this pace. I don't know what the record is like in the divisional era for five teams, like the best overall winning percentage.
Well, the Rockies are going to bring that down enough.
That'll hurt a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the context,
like the historic, like what is the best division of all time?
I don't think there's ever been four, has there ever been four 90 win teams in the same division? I can't imagine that there's never been four playoff teams from the same division, I don't believe.
I don't know if you can you get that?
You can get four playoff teams from the same division.
Right now you can, right?
With three wild cards now, only in the last 2 years. It's not happened. You've had two wild cards and a division champ, but you've never had all three wild cards. It's usually thought of to be impossible just because of the unbalanced schedule, but with a more balanced schedule, and if everybody dominates the Rockies, who are really bad, and you do play well in all your games against the other divisions in the interleague, it's theoretically possible you could get four playoff teams.
I think it's also going to be hard, Ben, because I've seen a couple of power rankings in the last week that have the Yankees as the top team in the American League, but seventh or eighth overall.
Yeah.
So I don't know that it's just the division that's really good. The whole National League, the Cubs, the Mets, the Phillies are three really good teams also. We just found out about the Cubs, so we'll see. I don't want to steal everybody's.
No, I mean, Woods, what do you think about the overall potential of this NL West?
I think sky's the limit. I'm probably more of a believer in the Giants than I was, certainly, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. We talked a little bit about it today, kind of the Buster Posey effect, doing things a little bit differently. Again, just an organization, they don't stay down long. They just don't stay down long. If they're down, they don't stay down for a very long time. They're terrifying. They're doing it a lot like the way we're doing it. And, you know, we're going to meet up with those guys in 10 days or so and see how that looks. You know, they've got arms. They've got guys that are playing above their heads right now. But they're a solid team. And you know, I think the culture there has certainly changed this year from last. And I think those guys, much like the Padres, I think they're a little embarrassed of how things have played out there the last couple seasons. And they scare the bejesus out of me, as does every team in this division, including still the Colorado Rockies.
And, Paul, you had the kind of good point about the Giants that, you know, Bob Melvin working with former player GMs like Billy Beane and now Buster Posey, they seem to have a lot of success, but clashed with A.J. Preller and with Farhan Zaidi in his first year. I mean, we didn't hear the stories, but obviously the results on the field weren't good, but they look good now with what's going on so far with the Giants.
Yeah, we inferred a lot there probably with Bob Melvin and how things went here with Preller and up there with Farhan. I still think Bob Melvin's a good manager. I thought he was a good manager when he was here. I don't think it was the right fit for him here, but that doesn't mean he's a bad manager.
I agree.
The guy knows what he's talking about, and if it's just a matter of getting guys that he's comfortable working with, then so be it. It didn't work out here. It actually did work out for 1 year. I had a lot of fun in 2022.
So much fun.
It didn't end the way we wanted it to, but I had so much freaking fun covering that team.
Incredible.
I think we kind of forget that a little bit when we look at how bad 2023 was. Oh, this guy's a terrible manager. I'm like, well, was he a terrible manager last year? Because things went pretty well. For the division, yeah, again, I don't know. How do you determine what the best division in baseball history is? Is it four 88-plus win teams, or is it two teams like we had a couple of years ago where the Giants won 107 and the Dodgers won 106? I'd say that's a pretty damn good division as well. So I think it's going to be the best division in baseball this year. I don't know about all time.
Historically, yeah. All right, your thoughts, Braden, on the NL West as a whole this season?
Yeah, it's obviously legit. I mean, I've been saying on the show, you know, you got to worry about the Arizona Diamondbacks. You know, the Giants kind of snuck up on us a little bit. But they were, based on the way that their roster was assembled and having, Bob Melvin as a manager, you knew they were going to be competitive. I think they're playing a little bit over their skis right now. But, I mean, they went to Philadelphia and just kicked the living snot out of the Phillies for the last couple of days, and they did the same thing to the Yankees over the weekend. So I definitely do think this is definitely the best division in baseball. You know, going into the season, most people knew the National League was going to be better than the American League, you know, just with how much better the rosters were. In terms of, like, best division ever, I think it's just hard to compare because of the schedules, like, as you mentioned, the unbalanced schedules before. I just don't think you would have had a way of determining that because you used to play every team like 20 times in your division as of 13 times now, where you can rack up wins against lousy divisions out there in baseball. But I think you can make a good argument when you're discussing with your buddies at a bar about best all-time division, because so far the NL West is legit, and I think all four teams are hanging around. I would not, if you're going to get four teams from the same division in the playoffs, I think this is the best chance that we've ever had in Major League Baseball.
You only have to do like 45 years of research or whatever, because before divisional, 1969, there was no division.
There you go.
So,
Matt, your thoughts on the NL West?
You guys said it all. I think the 1899 AL Central would have been the best.
Listen to what Chris said.
The Cleveland Spiders, actually.
Did he not even listen at all?
Brought them down. No, I got nothing to say. But Buster Posey effect is real.
Hey, Cincinnati Red Stockings.
Thanks for volunteering for the 49 years of research or whatever it is.
We'll Chris
you know.
Loves that.
I probably will go look
it up. Look it up.
You can bring it up on next week's roundtable.
Yeah, right.
That's right. Over there. Your homework for next week.
I'm on vacation next week. All right. It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, brought to you by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. Let's finish up last couple of minutes looking ahead to the road trip coming up. The Houston Astros, usually a tough place to play, but they don't have quite as many stars as they used to with Kyle Tucker and Alex Bregman gone. Chris, you like this one. I did a little going back this morning. Okay. The Astros have alternated wins and losses since April 2nd. They did lose yesterday, which means they are on pace to win on their next game. Hopefully the Padres can mix that up. But Astros and Tigers, your thoughts on the next six games of the Padres?
I'll try to leave a lot for everybody this time.
Thanks.
We talked about them not, you know, doing well against lefties. They should see Framber Valdez, and I assume they'll see Tarek Skubal.
I think they're missing Skubal. He's pitching this weekend, maybe.
Well, then that's a different story. But I was going to say we might find out about their lefties.
Framber's going to pitch Sunday Night Baseball against Cease, which is the ESPN game on Sunday night. So you will get him. That should be a good matchup. We'll see about Skubal going forward. Matt, Astros and Tigers.
Chris and I talked about this briefly yesterday. The Astros are just not the same team. I'm not as afraid of the Astros as I am of the Tigers. I think the Tigers are a better team than people are giving them credit for, and I don't know what the weather is going to be like in Detroit, but we saw how the Padres played when they played the Cubs in the cold and the wind, and it wasn't good. So I think this road trip is going to be interesting. It's the first real test of a road trip, I think, where you could go out and lose the road trip if you don't play well.
Braden, I don't know. Tigers doesn't really have anything to do with Detroit, as far as I know, but I do like the old English D, and I love Magnum P.I. wearing his his Tigers hat, at least. That was kind of cool.
Same him saying I love the old English D.
I knew that was going to happen. I was told from some people, I'm going to have an Astros guest on tomorrow. Apparently, and I don't quote me on this, but this is what I was told, the Astros do not do well at home against teams above 500 since 2018. So maybe that's a step in the right direction for the Padres. But I'm not afraid of any team in the American League. I don't think anybody in the American League is better than the teams that the Padres are going to play. I really don't think there's any team in the American League that's better than the Chicago Cubs. And the Padres just split with them and had a pretty good, exciting playoff-level series for six games, three in Chicago and three here. So as long as you play 500 ball on the road, the way you're playing at home, the way you've made Petco Park a home field advantage, I think you'll be okay. So if you can go 3-3, sounds good.
We shared a baseball truth, though. No one really plays well against teams above 500 because you don't have to be a good team.
No.
You just have to tread water against the good teams and beat up on the bad teams, which is what the Padres haven't done in the past, but are doing this year. Now, whether the Astros belong in the okay teams or good teams, Paul, I don't know exactly yet.
I'm not sold on the Astros. Again, it's April 17th. I'm not super intimidated by them, especially. I mean, like, I don't know anything about Ryan Gusto going up against Kyle Hart tomorrow night, but when you're throwing Hart, and then you're throwing King and Cease at them. I expect to win 2 out of 3 this weekend. I expect them to go 4-2. I do think I agree with Scraby. I think the Tigers are sneaky good this year, but especially if you're missing Scooble, that's a team you should probably take care of.
Woods, your thoughts on the upcoming road trip to wrap things up?
You know, beat the teams that you should beat, and I think that these are two teams the Padres should beat. I mean, yeah, 3-3 is always a good road trip. It's fine, but yeah, I think you know you got your two studs going, even though one of them is currently the weakest link. Let's break that. Let's get back into the fold of being an ace. Take 2 or 3 from them. And
Sunday night baseball is a great time to do that.
It's a great time to do it.
Probably a good success on that day too.
Yeah, and I'm you know, listen, I'm scared of everybody. That's just how I roll. I'm enjoying it one day at a time, buddy.
Well, as we wrap things up, last minute or so, good luck next week without me. Chris, I don't have any advice. I know you're going to do a good job next week, although I will tell you this job is getting harder and harder every week as the Padres continue to play well.
Yeah. Yes.
I'll take it.
Not a lot to complain about.
Yeah, that was the first thing Braden told me this morning. He goes, I got nothing. They're winning too many winning. Games.
There's nothing to be upset about. Everything's great.
Fake outrage.
Well, yeah. Right. We'll take it.
So I don't know what you're cheering for. A nice 2-4 week that would give you plenty to talk about, or a 5-1 road trip where you're sitting here with a double roundtable drafts and stuff. That's it for us. For the entire panel, thank you for joining us on the 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.